Welcome to Geek Orthodox. I'm Father Justin, geek from my youth, and in this episode of the World of Code podcast, I want to review what we've covered so far about computer code and the world of code in which we live, and then begin to apply some of that. Now, we began by looking at computer code as a TRS-80 color computer BASIC, just because that's what was my entry into the world of code, and we discovered that computer code repeats remembered commands sequentially. And then we added also conditionally. And this is a reasonably good summary of what computer code does. It might not actually be the best summary, though, of what computer code is. As we dug a little deeper into the hardware that is the embodiment of computer code, it might be more accurate to say that computer code is a sequence of commands to store, calculate, branch, and or compare, which, if you noticed, are actually fairly equivalent to what we just had in that description, that more sort of linguistic description, because computers, as they are currently used, operate with memory. So they remember things. And they have all sorts of different commands, but most of those commands are related to calculation or to comparison. And then one of the other features of computer code that is kind of fundamental to how it works is that it branches. It can branch conditionally, or it can branch to loop and repeat things. And as a result of this abstracted and disambiguated language that we use, which is computer code then is often used to create and or to process something which we call data. Now, this is one thing that I haven't actually covered yet. It's a bit of a tangent, and I'm going on this tangent partly because it's relevant, and partly because I kind of went on a tangent over the last couple of weeks myself with my wife, taking her into the hospital, and I was reminded of just how huge an impact the world of code has had on us as I'm sitting in the hospital listening to my wife struggle to breathe and to the machines that go ping, as was so aptly illustrated in Monty Python. And this actually gets me to one of the things that I want to do with this tool set that I hope that I'm creating here to understand the world of code in which we live, which is to say, I don't want to denigrate the world of code in which we now live. It is what it is. We have no power to, at least as individuals, to disassociate ourselves with this world of code, or from this world of code, nor do I think we necessarily should. It is the society, it is the culture, the subculture into which we have now been born, or in which we now find ourselves. But it's important for us to understand how it works so that we can really start to dig into what aspects of this world of code are positive, and what aspects are perhaps less positive, possibly even misleading. And here I want to actually go back to that beginning point where we talked about the anthropomorphization that we do with computers and, well, really with everything. We anthropomorphize, as I said at the beginning, in order to understand. And that's fine. People often want to diss that or look at that as some sort of negative. I think that's just how we as human beings empathetically begin the process of understanding something that has some parallel to that which we know, our own experience, but then, of course, is always in some way different from what we experience. And the trick, particularly with the world of code and with computers, is to, on the one hand, take and use this anthropomorphization of computers as something that is helpful and that helps us to understand. They have memory, like we do. They can decide on some level, like we do with comparison. They can go off in different directions with branching, like we do. They can make calculations, like we do. We were originally the first computers. But on the other hand, we need to keep in mind that these parallels, while they are helpful for our understanding of computers, are necessarily limited. Memory, for example. Human memory is both more nuanced and complicated than the ones and zeros that computer memories are made up of, and more persistent, at least in terms of RAM, but also more malleable than, say, computer long-term storage, like disk drives or solid-state drives. Human ability to choose. Most religion and philosophy that reflects on the human condition would say that we have at least some degree of free will, the ability to choose for ourselves. Computers don't. Their behavior is determined either by the code that we use to control the computer, or by larger patterns that are derived perhaps from our own linguistic patterns in the case of large language model artificial intelligences. So these parallels then are both helpful and for understanding and also potential pitfalls. And as long as we keep that in mind, this anthropomorphization of computers will be just fine. Another important reason to keep in a sort of dynamic tension these similarities and also the differences between us and our creation, the computers that run our world of code, is not simply for understanding of the devices and the code itself, but for understanding of how they affect us. And an excellent example of this would be the data that I've concluded with, and perhaps should have started with, because computers mostly start with data. What are they storing at the beginning? They're storing data. What are they remembering? They're remembering data. But computers, as I said, remember data, store data, process data differently than we do. We have certain limitations when it comes to data. We tend to need to abstract data. One example that comes to mind is good old Gregor Mendel, the father of modern genetics, who has fairly recently gotten into a certain degree of trouble in terms of his reputation for fudging his data. After all, he did live in the beginnings of the scientific age, and so people expected him to have, they didn't expect him to clean up his data. They expected him to present his raw data and then to draw his conclusions from it. But it looks like he's actually cleaned up his data and then presented it in a cleaner form. But then that's a very human thing to do. And it's not necessarily deceptive. He was right about his conclusions and right about the statistical probabilities involved. It actually goes all the way back to the ancient world, where you actually had this tradition of sort of cleaning up, abstracting, sorting, and presenting the essence of the data is something that we see in the shorter stories and narratives of the ancient world, as opposed to the long form narratives of some of the novels of Charles Dickens or Leo Tolstoy, where you have a whole detail piled upon detail, and you can only have that when you already have technology that allows for the preservation and the transmission of large amounts of data, in this case via the printing press and the whole industry surrounding that. So likewise, when we start to dig into how computers are affecting us, how this world of code that we've created and which is all around us is affecting us, we need to look at not only the nature of the code itself, but also the its branching nature, the storage, but also the way that it is implemented and can continue on ad infinitum as long as we continue providing it with electricity. One of the results of this is not merely data, but what we would call big data. Because now all of a sudden we have not only the capacity to generate large amounts of data, now that we are no longer the computer, the computer is now the computer, it can just keep going, generating more and more data, more and more observations, more and more historical data points, or measurement points, or statistical points. And then it can also take all of that data and go through it systematically, as we instruct it to, in a way that we would never be able to do. And one of the very visible examples for me in this last couple of weeks was the emergency room, those machines that go ping. They give data streams that we, well, not so much myself, but the people in the emergency rooms, the experts who operate the machines, the very wonderful nurses and doctors, have come to rely on. Again, my intent here is not to denigrate, but to observe. And what I observed was that these data streams are very carefully monitored and very helpful because they give insight into the condition of the patient. In this case, my wife, as she's struggling to breathe and occasionally getting feeling very hot and perspiring. And that was the point at which the data stream actually ended up being misleading. Because the assumption behind, when we have so much data, one of the assumptions is simply that, well, we know what's going on. The data is showing us what's going on. And so there were two responses to the data from two different nurses. One would come in, and when my wife was complaining about being hot, take her temperature and just look at the thermometer and say, nope, you don't have a temperature. And that was it. That was kind of the end of the story. The data was there that she did not have a temperature, so obviously she couldn't actually be hot. The other nurse, whose real name was Karen, say that because Karen gets an awful lot of flack as a name due to the stupid data streams of internet memes. This Karen looked at my wife, looked at the temperature, said, well, you seem to have a temperature that we can't detect. Now, the language there might not have been scientifically accurate. If there was a temperature, it should be detectable, right? But she then went on to make my wife as comfortable as possible and did not assume that what my wife was experiencing was a figment of her imagination because it wasn't in the data stream. She assumed that she was experiencing and narrating something to the nurses and the doctors that was real. And my wife, who is interested in health and naturally was at that point interested in her own health and likes to watch YouTube videos, eventually discovered a YouTube video which indicated that this experience of perspiration is actually fairly common when the body is struggling to allocate resources, and the which her body was certainly doing at the time. And when shortly after you eat, then all of a sudden, a lot of the body's resources are, the blood is flowing down to process the food that you've just taken in. And that causes perspiration. Hence, her feeling hot, perspiring, without a temperature. And so I think this is an excellent example, a really key example of what we need to be aware of and look for when we are wrapping our brains around, okay, what are the effects of living in a world of code? There's going to be some things that are, as I say, simply amplified. And it might be difficult to fully determine that the pattern that we're seeing is a result of computerization. Usually we can have some good clues when we can see a before and after. This is what things were like before computerization. This is what things are like after. But it will always be somewhat subjective. But the other aspect of it, so we can look at the different attributes like the need to remember data, store data, branch conditionally upon certain data sets, and see those as potential indications that the world of code is affecting our experience, which is what I am mostly interested in and want to look at. And then as we see also some of the effects, like big data, we can then start to see how these are affecting things like our medical system, things like our narratives and the games that we play, things like our financial system, and what effects those are having then as we computerize things, as we add more and more of our world to this world of code, what effects those are having on us, on our society, on the world in which we live. And this is what we always need to do as human beings. Every time that we deploy a tool, and this is a pretty important and universally applicable tool, it has an effect on us and on the world that we live in. And the real key is not to say, well, I don't want to live in this world, but to consider carefully, what kind of world do we want to live in? What kind of world is good for us? If we have to live and move and breathe and have our being in a world that we are in part responsible for creating, what do we want to invest in? And what do we want to avoid in order to ensure that this world that we are creating, this world of code that is becoming ever more a part of our world, is something that is spiritually, emotionally, psychologically healthy and uplifting, moving us in a direction that is positive, enjoyable, and good, not only for us as individuals, but for us as a society and as a community that lives and moves and has our being in this world of code.